Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. And today we have three popular performing artists exploring the question of why. Why is America so militaristic? Why are we always invading people and things? I hope you'll be able to stay tuned for, well, the answer that they come up with. We have precious few good journalists, God knows. But of those few, Robert Fisk, for instance, several have mentioned this. When the three World Trade Center buildings collapsed into their own shadow, the U.S. corporate-controlled news media refused to consider the most obvious and most important question. Why? I don't mean, why did the three buildings all fall down so neatly and tidily? Though that's a terrific question, too. But I mean, why did someone attack them in the first place? A violent crime had been committed, and when police investigate a violent crime, one of the first things they look for is a likely motive. But the elites did not want us to ask why in this case. The reporters and editors, who are now giving prostitution a bad name, duly oblige their owners. To make a long story short, the sage of Crawford, G.W. Bush, answered the question right off, and that was that. They did it because they hate our freedoms. Case closed. Makes perfect sense. And why did they assassinate Martin Luther King? I guess because they hate narrow lapels on men's suits. Makes just as much sense. Why did U.S. troops invade Grenada in 1983? Usually this question is met with two counter-questions. One, did we invade Grenada? And two, where the hell is Grenada? But to return to the Eastern Seaboard. Of course, in 2001, the powers that be did not want us to do any serious thinking about why extremely religious Saudi Arabians hate what the World Trade Center represents. That's because some of the likely answers don't reflect well on the powers that be. But let's take a step back and ask an even larger question. Why are the American people, or rather the American government, so warlike, so bellicose? Why has the economy been on a war footing since 1941? Why do we fail to demobilize when World War II ended? Why are we always invading and intervening in other countries on every continent on Earth? Why do we have around 750 military bases in around 200 different countries? How many overseas military bases does Canada have? Let's take a glance at the U.S. armed military interventions in other countries in just, say, the last quarter of the 20th century. I just happen to have a list to hand. We've got Cambodia, 1975, Angola, 1976 to 1992, Iran, 1980, Libya, 1981. Hey, remember when we were calling Libya's leader the Hitler of the Middle East? He's still in office, by the way. Can anyone even remember his name? I can, but I'm not telling. El Salvador, 1981 to 1992. It'll be on the test. Nicaragua, 1981 to 1990. Honduras, 1982 to 1990. Lebanon, 1982 to 1984. Grenada, there we are, 1983 to 1984. Libya again, 1986. Bolivia, 1987. Iran, 1987 to 88. Libya, yet again, 1989. Just can't stay away from those shores of Tripoli. Virgin Islands, 1989. Panama, 1989. Remember that? We killed 2,000 Panamanians in order to arrest our former tool and CIA asset, Manuel Noriega, because we were shocked, to find that he had something to do with the drug trade. Where are we? Here we are. Liberia, 1990. Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Kuwait, 1990 to 1991. You remember that one? That was what we used to call the Gulf War. Now we call the First Gulf War. Somalia, 1992 to 1994. Bosnia, 1993. Haiti, 1994. Croatia, 1995. Congo, 1996 to 1997. Liberia, 1997. Albania, 1997.
Sudan, 1998. Afghanistan, 1998. The Clinton years were sure good ones if you like war, weren't they? Iraq, 1998. Yugoslavia, 1999. Yemen, 2000. And the less said about Macedonia, 2001, the better. Now here's the take-home final exam, class. From this list, pick any 24 military interventions and explain how each relates to defense of the United States. But seriously, from time to time now, we'll take a long look at the big question of why. Why the United States is so fond of wars and similar military actions. Today we'll hear three voices besides my own, all of performing artists. They all locate the problem with men, with socialization of men, with gender roles, maybe with testosterone. Just what you'd expect lesbian feminists to say, right? But these artists are not lesbian feminists. They're male, and apparently all heterosexual. They are the late folk singer and storyteller Utah Phillips, the late comedian George Carlin, and the still alive and kicking singer and songwriter Bruce Springsteen. Let's start with the dead. Utah Phillips enlisted in the Army and was sent to Korea right after the Korean War ended in the early 1950s. George Carlin enlisted in the Air Force and was later discharged for being, I think the military term for it is, an insubordinate smart-ass wise guy. First, here's Utah.
I joined the Army and then got pipelined for Korea. I was there after Panmunjom, you know, after the treaty, right after the treaty, the truce. Life amid the ruins. I mean, it was absolute life amid the ruins. Children crying, that's the memory of Korea. Devastation. I saw an elegant and ancient cultures in a small Asian country devastated by the impact of cultural and economic imperialism, and the impact of an army of young men given unlimited license for excess of every kind, of violence, sexual, booze, what have you, drugs, a blueprint for self-destruction. And I knew that if I endured that, I would perish. I would simply perish. It was there in Korea, in that situation, around those kinds of experiences, and I was up on the Imjin River, and I wanted to swim in it because I wanted to wash all that away, and I was told I couldn't swim in the Imjin, and it was the young Korean there, Yoon Suk Han, who explained to me why I couldn't. He said, "When we marry, we move into our grandparents, in with our grandparents, and." But the place is devastated. There's nothing growing. It's all dead. So when the first child comes, somebody has to leave, and it's the old man. The grandfather will leave and go sit on the bank of the Imjin with a jug of water and a blanket until he dies and will roll down into the water. He said, "You can't swim in the Imjin because those are our elders being carried out to sea." Well, that's when I cracked. You know, that's when I broke up. I said, "I can't do this anymore. You know, this is all wrong. It all has to change. And the change has to begin with me." Right then that I decided that the idea of manhood that I had been given, that blueprint for self-destruction, that my father had lied to me about manhood, my drill instructors, my army sergeants, my scoutmaster, my gym instructor in high school, they all lied to me about what manhood was, and it was up to me to begin to figure out what it really meant.
How did you do it?
I decided that the great struggles, the wars that you're talking about, it could be the Bosnian War, it could be the Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, it could be the Korean War, it could be the Iraqi War, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all, the thing they all have in common is that it's young men with guns doing it to everybody else. Women aren't doing it, kids aren't doing it, old people aren't doing it, disabled people aren't doing it, it's young people with guns, you know, they're doing it to everybody else. And we don't have a problem with violence in the world, we've got a serious male problem. And I bought into it, so I know, and I'm buying myself out of it, you see. That's terribly, terribly important for me, for people to understand that and begin to shut up and listen. The most important movement in the world is the feminist movement. If we can really figure out what's going on between men and women, the other problems will take care of themselves.
Utah Phillips, speaking to Amy Goodman in 2004. I'd hesitate to ascribe the cause of war only to machismo American style. After all, war is also a good investment for at least some investors. But many agree with Utah that one big cause of war is the way men are brought up. George Carlin agrees. First, though, he emphasizes the racist aspect of our recent wars. This recording is from the early 1990s, right after what we now call Gulf War I. So when he talks about Bush, of course he means George the First, not George the Second.
Yeah. Okay. It's been a little while. It's been a little while since I've been here, and a couple of things have happened in that time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings, too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a... Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown. Now you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do, it's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. Me, I look at war a little bit differently. To me, war is a lot of waving, okay? Simple thing, that's all it is. War is a whole lot of men standing out in a field waving their at one another. Men are insecure about the size of their dicks, and so they have to kill one another over the idea. That's what all that adolescent, macho, male posturing and strutting in bars and locker rooms is all about. So, in this particular case, Saddam Hussein had questioned the size of George Bush's d- and George Bush had been called a wimp for so long Wimp rhymes with limp. George has been called a wimp for so long that he has to act out his manhood fantasies by sending other people's children to die. Even the name Bush. Even the name Bush is related to the genitals without being the genitals. A Bush is a sort of passive secondary sex characteristic. Now, if this man's name had been George Boner, well, he might have felt a little bit better about himself and we wouldn't have had any trouble over there in the first place. This whole country has a manhood problem. Big manhood problem in the USA. You can tell from the language we use. Language always gives you away. What did we do wrong in Vietnam? We pulled out. Huh? Not a very manly thing to do, is it? When you're f- people, you gotta stay in there and f- them good. F- them all the way. Until the end. F- them to death. F- them to death. F- them to death. Stay in there and keep f***ing them until they're all dead. We left a few women and children alive in Vietnam, and we haven't felt good about ourselves since. That's why in the Persian Gulf, George Bush had to say, "This will not be another Vietnam." He actually used these words. He said, "This time we're going all the way." Imagine an American president using the sexual slang of a 13-year-old to describe his foreign policy. If you want to know what happened in the Persian Gulf, just remember the names of the two men who were running that war. Dick Cheney and Colin Powell. Somebody got f***ed in the
Bruce Springsteen's story is set in the late 1960s. At this point, Bruce himself doesn't have much self-awareness. The man attaining some insight is his lunkhead of a father. The story leads to a song about a river that played a key role in the singer's life. Not all that similar to Korea's Incheon River for Utah Phillips, but not all that different either.
Me and my dad used to go at it all the time. Over almost anything. But I used to have really long hair, way down past my shoulders. I was 17 or 18. Oh man, he used to hate it. And we got to where we fight so much that I'd spend a lot of time out of the house. And in the summertime, it wasn't so bad, because it was warm and your friends were out. But in the winter, I remember standing downtown and it would get so cold. And when the wind would blow, I had this phone booth that I used to stand in. And I used to call my girl, like for hours at a time, just talking to her all night long. And finally, I get my nerve up to go home. And I'd stand there in the driveway, and he'd be waiting for me in the kitchen. And I'd tuck my hair down on my collar, and I'd walk in, and he'd call me back to sit down with him. And the first thing he'd always ask me was, what did I think I was doing with myself? And the worst part about it was I could never explain it to him. I remember I got in a motorcycle accident once, and I was laid up in bed, and he had a barber come in and cut my hair. And man, I can remember telling him that I hated him and that I would never ever forget him. And he used to tell me, man, I can't wait till the army gets you. When the army gets you, they're going to make a man out of you. They're going to cut all that hair off, and they'll make a man out of you. And this was in, I guess, 68, and there was a lot of guys. And the neighborhood going to Vietnam. I remember the drummer in my first band coming over my house with his Marine uniform on, saying that he was going and that he didn't know where it was. And a lot of guys went, and a lot of guys didn't come back. And a lot that came back weren't the same anymore. And I remember the day I got my draft notice. I hid it from my folks. And 3 days before my physical, me and my friends went out and we stayed up all night. And we got on the bus to go that morning, man. We were all so scared. And I went and I failed. I came home. Nothing to applaud about. But I remember coming home after I'd been gone for 3 days. And walking in the kitchen, and my mother and father were sitting there. My dad said, "Where you been?" I said, "I went to take my physical." He says, "What happened?" I said, "They didn't take me." And he said, "That's good."
Down at the reservoir.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced at WWUH-FM at the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed here are my own or those of my guests and do not reflect the views of anyone else connected with this station or its gracious licensee. For feedback, more information, or podcasts, please go to http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Thanks to democracynow.org for the Utah Phillips recording. Please come back again next week.